Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Monday morning, you sure look fine. Friday, I got traveling on my mind. First you love me, and then you fade away. I can't go on believing this way. I got nothing but love for you. Tell me what you really want.
On. Okay, great. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mike Gomez, and I was the audit manager on this engagement. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share the results of our operational audit on the city of Gulf Breeze. In September 2020, we issued our operational audit report number 2021-030. With 45 audit findings.
So this is Mike Gomez. This is the auditor who handled the audit for Gulf Breeze that began as two questions from the residents of Tiger Point area that are outside the city limits who were unhappy with the inability or unwillingness or failure, depending on who you want to ask, to basically follow through on the kind of outrageous, in my opinion, but nevertheless made commitments to them as a result of the Tiger Point golf course purchase. And this was all stemming from the meeting that they had overseen by the county where, you know, they were told they'd get some stuff and they didn't get that stuff in the end. So they sent a letter to Doug Broxson, and Doug Broxson started an audit. About 400 of them complained, and they sent a letter to Doug Broxson. Doug Broxson started an audit. That audit began with two questions. 28 months later, in September, the audit was done. And after 45 different findings involving the city of Gulf Breeze, of varying degrees of significance, I'll tell you, from having looked over the audit. I haven't read every page of it, but I've read all the findings and I've read most of the responses by the city, and at parts my eyes glaze over because it's an audit and it's a response to an audit. But so be it. Essentially, Sam Abel, city manager, and Sherry Fitch, the mayor, and a couple of other people went to Tallahassee last week to, you know, be there when the auditing committee, the Joint Committee on Auditing, gets together. And here's the report from the auditor, Mike Gomez, who did it. So what was the basic idea of it? Well, you know, he went through every single part of the audit's findings and then a little bit of explanation, and then the senators, and then a little bit of response from Chair Fitch and Mayor Fitch and Administrator Abel, and then some questions from the senators. What kinds of things came up as a result of the findings?
In finding one, city records did not demonstrate that the city's purchase of the entire 365-acre Tiger Point Golf Club was necessary, or that the process used to acquire the property was prudent or appropriate.
So they think a smaller slice of land, a better deal, a deal that was more vetted, better comparisons of the value of the property, better understanding of the end likely consequences of purchasing the property, and so forth. There were a whole bunch of ways that it could have been done better. Number two.
In finding two, we noted that the city did not seek legal counsel prior to the golf club acquisition regarding the authority to make certain concessions promised by the then city manager to property owners near the golf club, nor was the city council informed prior to approving the golf club acquisition of the concessions made. Many of the concessions were subsequently determined to be not reasonable, practical, or enforceable.
As I say, the concessions made by this in this meeting, and they say the Gulf Breeze City Council wasn't properly informed along the way. You know, this is years ago. This is when Matt Danheiser was the mayor and Buzz Eddy was the city administrator. And basically they're saying that, you know, the process of agreeing to those concessions to the Homeowners Association and then following through on them, you know, a lot of that stuff wasn't done the way it should have been done, or it wasn't done openly and transparently as it should have been done. And then it finally, you know, there was a result, and the result was, again, this is the auditor's perspective, okay? This is the, you know, the state's perspective.
In finding three, we noted that notwithstanding the intent to make the golf club a successful golf venue, The city has experienced ongoing losses from golf club operations totaling $5.4 million through the 2017-18 fiscal year.
Yeah, and $5.5 million of losses doesn't look so good, but again, that's the auditor's perspective, and then the city was giving their responses. Now, those are just the first three out of the 45 points. There were two other ones that, judging on the basis of, I don't know, what I thought was significant and what, you know, has been covered in the news over the course of the 7 years that I have been here doing this show, one was that the auditor and the board were concerned about not exactly the having of a special advisor, which was Buzz Eddy, okay, but just kind of the way that was budgeted, essentially.
For finding 24, the city hired a special advisor, although that position was not included on the city council-approved schedule of authorized positions. In addition, city records did not evidence that payments to the special advisor were supported by records evidencing hours worked, and the city made salary overpayments and excess contributions to the special advisor's deferred compensation plan account.
Okay, so the city's answer on this one is actually pretty easy. Yeah, you came in with a two-question audit that took 28 months because you put everything through the fine-tooth comb is my preferred, more air-friendly metaphor. Okay. And in the end, you found what you'll find if you put a team of auditors on 28 months looking at a small city's operations. You find a lot of stuff, not necessarily stuff that's wrong and or, you know, not necessarily like big mistakes, but stuff that didn't follow procedures, stuff that should have had better checking mechanisms, stuff that should have, you know, and in some cases was out of line with state law. Okay. But most of which is remediable, you know, they can fix going forward, not all of which, because some of it involves, you know, things that were done in the past. But the special advisor, Buzz Eddy, was kept on the payroll after Sam Abel took over because they needed him to answer questions about the audit. So the special advisor was 100% the result of the fact that you had this massive audit going on. They kept him along because he had institutional knowledge. Anyway, so that was one. And then the other one that caught my attention, and this was only a minor blip for them, but it is worth mentioning.
36, we noted that the city did not document a cost-benefit analysis that considered alternative options to achieve city objectives prior to entering into protracted and expensive litigation regarding beach access.
So this is the Catawba Street access. This is the long process where the city wound up being wrong. And, you know, of course, Mayor Danheiser pushed heavily on this. There was, we had a lot of conversations about this on the air. Their view is, look, a litigation like this can turn out to be expensive. Y'all didn't game plan in advance how much it would cost. And because of that, you lost a lot of money for the taxpayers. And, you know, I know what the city's response is. Well, it's hard to know in advance how litigation is going to go. And it's not easy to have done something else. The auditors seem to think they could have just bought a strip of land somewhere else. That's not obvious that that was available, said the city. And then, you know, you think you're going to win because you think you've got a good case and you think you got to preserve beach access, that small strip of beach access that no longer exists for the public because they won their court case. And yeah, I mean, in the end, it looks like if we could have not done that, that would have been better. But it's hard to know that in advance. At least that's the city's response. What was interesting to me about all this, and again, looking over the audit, the response on Tiger Point losing $5 million is, well, yeah, we knew we weren't going to make money on it. The whole point was to avoid having to pay tens of millions of dollars, maybe 20, 30, 40, we don't, you know, very, very expensive wastewater treatment plant. This gives us the spray field, and we're going to rehab the facility and then resell it, which is supposed to sell this week, in fact, on Friday. Yeah, but that's not the perspective that we were looking at. The takeaway to me, though, and I thought this was very interesting, is a lot of the problems at Gulf Breeze, you know, that were uncovered in Gulf Breeze, they said had to do with being too involved in too many different layers of organizational operation. You know, like the Capital Trust, the SSURS, all of these different things that just kind of like this multi-layered beast that would be better either to not exist at all or to exist in a more organized and actually separated layer from layer kind of way that didn't have employees operating at different levels of responsibility. That's my read on the audit. And I think that's probably right, you know, sort of simplifying it one way or the other. either abandoning a lot of these constructs or finding a way to do them that's cleaner. The other observation was specifically having to do with the fact that the people who were complaining about the Tiger Point deal were outside of the city of Gulf Breeze proper. They were in Tiger Point. Tiger Point's part of the county, not part of the city. And the problem is that if you're providing, you know, water to a massive number of people, but you only have a small slice of those people that are actually city residents, well, now you have a weird political representational problem. And you have this weird system where you're providing a service, and this is not uncommon, you know, but this is a problem, where you're providing a municipal service outside of your municipal boundaries. And then the question is, well, are these your citizens or aren't these your citizens? You know, they're your customers, but are you responsible for them? They don't have political say because they live outside the city. It's just a weird situation. And so their recommendation in the end is Dennis Baxley, who's the chair of the committee, he basically said, you know, what you ought to do is you ought to think about annexing Tiger Point.
And I would clearly look, if you haven't already, at this option of requiring people to annex in, because then at least you would have property taxes coming in. That's an aside from this committee. That's just Dennis Baxley sharing what I think turned out to be a good counsel that City of Bellevue received in that regard,
where he had been the mayor previously. So that's a very interesting question, is whether people would be interested in annexing in. It put Gulf Breeze in a weird spot, though, because it'd be then a two-part city, right? You'd be proper and then Tiger Point, which is separated by Naval Live Oaks. But at least then the people who are affected by the decisions that are made with regards to water would have more of a direct say in the city, and there'd be less division between city proper and ratepayers involved in getting water from the city. So it's just interesting stuff. Basically, what the city told him is, look, a lot of these findings are not that big of a deal, but we will work on all of it. We don't agree necessarily with a couple of them, but for the most part, we're willing to work. And they were very pleased that they showed up. There was a little bit of a, you know, spit and match between Janet Cruz and Sam Abel. I didn't read it as all that much of a thing, particularly. It's, you know, it's juicy audio, but it's not all that much substance. And I'm kind of, you know, a person who goes away from stuff that's, you know, inflammatory just for the sake of being inflammatory. And I didn't think it amounted to much in the end. But like I said, the short takeaway is they're going to come back for an audit next year. And, you know, we'll see whether the city lives up to the close examination. Again, there are other terms you might use that the state is going to put them through. Because, you know, the cities exist ultimately just like counties exist, with charters and, you know, elected officials and appointed officials at the pleasure of the governor, at the pleasure of the, you know, of the state. And so you have to prove to them that you're doing basically the job you're supposed to be doing. 521 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Think Americans will still be wearing masks, for example, in 2022?
You know, I think it is possible that that's the case.
Of course. It's also possible we'll be done wearing masks in July. Or it could be later than that. I mean, there's a large range of possible here. For everything from what it was, the thing I saw that somebody claimed that we might be done with it by April. Could be. And we might not be done with it by 2023. Could be. Till it happens, you're not sure. I'm 29 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. It looks like we're just right about ready to get hit with a big old rainstorm. Like, it's on us to the west, all stretching, gosh, way off into the Gulf and well up into Alabama. So it's coming east. It's like these lines of storms. So just be, it's to our west. It's coming this way. And
we're
there it is.
We're getting hit
now.
Right now.
I see.
We're getting hit now.
right now. Dive. Davis, what is with these Miami Heat uniforms? I mean, I swear to God, it looks like they lost a bet while they were at the cotton candy factory. What is with these uniforms? They're like bled pink on the one side and bled turquoise on the other side with a little bit of a white in the middle.
Oh, it's the Miami Vice uniform. That's what it is.
And Crockett and Tubbs never wore anything that looked like this.
It's supposed to be like, I think I definitely know it's Miami Vice, but I think the other part of it is also to honor the history and the way I'll say it, like the flavor of Miami.
Flavor is cotton candy. They succeeded. I just don't. It looked. I mean, I swear, if you washed your, you know, I don't know, your red shirt and your blue shirt with your white shirt, you'd get this. If you did it poorly, maybe. And it was funny looking to me. I was so confused. Even my kids who never watch sports, we turned it on for like 2 minutes. They're like, "What happened to their uniforms?" I'm like, I don't know. They're funny looking to me, but okay.
You know more because you listen to the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, 5 to 9 a.m. weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
One, two, one, woo! Young boy done me bad, went and did you wrong. Young boy done me bad, I went and did you wrong. And I got high eyes. Lord, I got high. Now I got a bone to pick with you, and I'm sure you know it's true. Oh, one day when y'all looking back, sad. When you're young, you get sad. When you're young, you get sad. And you get high.
And now, live from Las Vegas, it's Oops, You Did It Again with your host, Britney Spears.
Basically, I started this show, Oops, You Did It Again, so people could come on and apologize for things they've done wrong. Because after the Free Britney documentary came out, I'm receiving hundreds of apologies a day.
So, SNL's cold open tried to tie together a bunch of current plot lines involving people like Ted Cruz, Andrew Cuomo, what's her name, Maria Carano, I can never, what was the name of the actress that plays in Star Wars, The Mandalorian? Gina Carano, that's right. The former wrestler. So, but they started with Ted Cruz. The whole idea is come on the show and apologize. And Ted Cruz was portrayed by a woman with dreadlocks and is very, very overweight. I don't know who the actress was who was portraying him.
Adi Bryant.
Oh, thank you, Adi Bryant. That makes sense. Okay. First question, though, just as a general question, why is it that they only and always portray conservative politicians with women? No, serious question. It's kind of, I don't know, misogynistic? I don't know exactly what they're doing here, you know, but they do pretty consistently take conservative politicians and deliberately portray them with women. Why? As a way of emasculating, demeaning? I mean, clearly, they don't do it with liberal politicians. Just watch. You pay attention. Anyway, not, I mean, you can't be surprised. SNL is going to be SNL. SNL is wildly liberal. Asking them to be fair and balanced is ridiculous. I just ask that they be funny. And, you know, I ask questions when they don't make too much sense. Asking them to be funny might be too much. But anyway, here was the portrayal of Ted Cruz, the big, most important, significant story of last week.
I'm not tan. I just cried myself red over my fellow Texans. And that's why I drink in their honor.
See, it is an easy target. No doubt. It's no doubt. But the problem is, just generally, when it's a conservative target, it's hate-based rather than funny. And when it's a liberal target, it's like they miss the funny because they can't see how it's really a problem. I'm just compare the Cuomo treatment to the Ted Cruz treatment. And again, I cannot expect SNL to be fair about it. I just learn how to be funny. And learning how to be funny means attacking the stuff that you believe in and being willing to see the flaws, you know, at least see the flaws in what you believe in and see the merits, if you will, in the people you disagree with instead of just plain outright hating them. There was always something kind of loving in the past about the way, even like Dana Carvey's portrayal of George H.W. Bush, there was something kind of adorable about it because it wasn't just based in hate. But these days, the portrayals of their enemies is all just based in hate. And so it winds up, even when it has a chance of being funny, it winds up not really being all that funny.
So, Ted, Texas is going through a huge crisis of seas right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's real bad.
And you literally abandoned it and flew to Cancun for a family vacation.
That's right. And now I'm in a little bit of hot water, which I'm told is a thing no one in Texas has.
I have a chance. That's all right. And by the way, just consider the portrayal of Britney, which is kind of loving in its base. That's actually fairly funny. Anyway, here's the third part of the Ted Cruz.
Well, would you like to apologize?
Absolutely. I deeply regret my actions over the last couple days, mostly flying United. I'm sorry. I'm pretty bad at human stuff.
So you understand why people are calling you a coward?
Yeah, coward is actually the nicest word I heard. But let me ask you this. Would a coward have the cojones to blame his actions on his young daughters?
You blamed your daughters?
Oh, yeah. The whole trip was the girl's idea.
So that was the Ted Cruz treatment. And again, it's hard to defend his actions. They were stupid, no doubt, pretty much all around. I don't think it's all that significant in the grand scheme of things, but sure, it's certainly an easy target. Compare that. And by the way, A.D. Bryant's portrayal of him accent-wise is spot on. Just pretty good. Pretty good portrayal of the vocal mannerisms. But here's Pete Davidson as Andrew Cuomo.
Please welcome New York Governor Andrew Cuomo!
Hey, hello, all right, let's get this over with.
Governor, do you know why you're here today?
Is it because indoor dining is back in New York? That's exciting, right?
Governor.
All right, I know. It's because of the nursing home stuff.
Yeah, it's because of the nursing home stuff. What did I say after last week's show? I said they should have done a bit on Andrew Cuomo. There was all kinds of ways, especially involving, you know, you could have brought back the death that you had at the White House, which was Steve Bannon. There's all kinds of things you could have done that would have been really on point, that would have really skewered him over this incredibly bad decisions that he made that cost people their lives. You could have done all kinds of things. So here's the direction they went.
And what happened with the nursing homes?
Some of the people who died in the nursing homes were not counted as nursing home deaths. They were counted as hospital deaths. Which is basically what happens at Disney World, okay? People die, and they move the bodies. They say, oh, I guess Brenda died in the parking lot, not on the teacups. So, you know, we just did the Disney thing, all right? So what are we done here?
I wish. I wish.
Governor, I like you. You're from NYC, or as I call it, TRL. But don't you think you ought to apologize?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said I was sorry.
Okay, see? That wasn't so hard. People just want answers. Bill de Blasio says you ought to be investigated.
That bird bitch son of a lip. What?
See, this is... But at least they tried, I guess. You know, at least maybe they realized they couldn't go on without doing it. They realized they absolutely had to have something about Andrew. And by the way, Weekend Update did have a little bit more targeted comments about Andrew Cuomo. But I, you know what I hope? I've always hoped that SNL would be great. It has the potential and it has been in the past. I think the problem they have is sort of the same problem that Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert have right now, which is they've invested themselves so heavily in being anti-Trump and anti-conservative that now they don't have that target anymore. What do they do? What do they do? You know, there was this old thing since Rush passed away last week. It's worth mentioning. There was this old allegation that as soon as Clinton was out of office and there was a Republican in office, that he'd be out of a job. The allegation was all he did was exist to attack Clinton. And he always said that was never the point. That was never the thing, and that was never the basis of his popularity. And the people who thought that didn't understand what was going on. Well, he turned out to be right. It wasn't that primarily. But I am concerned on their behalf, really, that these shows like Colbert and Kimmel and not Fallon, obviously. Fallon doesn't care about politics. Not really. He'll do it if he has to. And SNL have invested themselves so heavily in being anti-Trump that now he's gone as a target. And, I mean, where do they find the funny anymore? We'll see. We'll see. I always want shows to be good. I want shows to be entertaining. I want them to be edifying. I want people. What you want is, and this is always my goal, is you want people who disagree with you to still at least feel like you understand their point of view. So if you're making fun of something, you know, if somebody makes a joke about Christians, I hope it's a good joke. There are plenty of them to be made. I want to laugh at Christians. The problem is, a lot of times the people that make jokes about Christians hate religion. And so they don't make good jokes about Christians. They make mean jokes that aren't funny because the people who actually believe in it, now, there's a lot of Christians that will not take any jokes well. That's their problem. But that's the point, is that your opponents, the people that you're satirizing, ought to laugh at it. They ought to think it's funny. Yeah, I deserve that one. That's the reaction you ought to get. You don't get that reaction awful lot when it's just hate comedy. 557 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more.
Don't
bet. So classic. 550 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola morning. Can I just tell you, this may not make me look all that good, but it's just the truth. Yakety Yak and Splish Splash, in my head, are the same song. I know they're not the same song. We had them both on 45. What's a 45? Stop it. But, you know, so I know that. But for whatever reason, when I hear Yakety Yak, what I think of is Splish Splash. Do you even know the song Splish Splash, Davis?
It's not ringing a bell.
Oh.
It is not ringing a bell at all.
Such sadness in me now. All right, fair enough. I'll see if I can. I have it in here somewhere. We'll see if I can find it. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom, who certainly knows Splish Splash.
Yakety yak, don't talk back.
What's going on in the newsroom, Mark?
The House set to get to work on passing a new coronavirus relief package. Republican Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana questioning whether the price tag's appropriate.
There's over $1 trillion of money unspent from previous relief bills that were bipartisan. The money's still sitting in a bank account.
The House Budget Committee taking up the nearly $2 trillion package today. A vote in the full House could happen later in the week. President Biden set to honor the lives lost to coronavirus. Tonight, he's expected to address the death toll, which, according to NBC News, has crossed the half-million mark, holding a candlelight ceremony at sundown tonight. United Airlines wants to know who leaked Senator Ted Cruz's flight information on his trip to Cancun. The airline says it's against policy to give out personal information about customers. Any employee involved faces termination. Well, I think it was just people just saw him. And
that's what I thought. I thought people just saw him and took pictures. And
say, oh, look, there's Ted Cruz.
Right, exactly. I mean, he was really hiding it with that Texas mask. You know, yeah. Way to go deep incognito, right? Yeah, well, I guess that was on the return after he got caught. But, you know, anyway. All right, Mark.
Well.
Thanks so much for the update. Thanks for reminding me that we're about to spend $2 trillion. That's more happy times for me. Mark, thanks for the update. 552 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Man, there's so much interesting stuff in the news. One of the just weird ones, and you heard this if you're listening to First Light on the way in, is, you know, the electric bills that people are seeing in Texas. Have you seen this? People are seeing electricity bills for the storm as high as $17,000. $17,000. Can you imagine that you're paying, you know, like $200, $300, $400 maybe? I mean, that's a huge electric bill, right? But let's say you're paying, you know, $200 a month, and then you know, somebody comes in and slaps you with a $17,000 bill for keeping your family alive during an ice storm. Whew. But it does point out the sort of obvious, which is if you use more electricity, it's going to cost more money. Now, the problem is, I guess that I'm not an expert. I was kind of listening to the First Light's conversation. She was explaining somehow this works. I guess the power was a variable amount of money, so it would vary tremendously. And so that, you know, it could go like the price for the electricity that people were consuming could vary wildly, which is not really a good plan. I mean, you want to have these long-term contracts locked in. You don't want to have it changing all the time because then you can't, you know, people can't budget, especially the people who are poorest, right, are going to have big increases. But apparently a megawatt is normally something like $50, and it went up to $9,000 based on supply and demand during the disaster. So people who had variable or indexed electricity plans, which is the only one that runs its own, you know, Texas runs its own standalone grid, not a good week for Texas, honestly, and a horrible week for the residents of Texas, at least the eastern, what, two-thirds or something like that. But if you have your power rate megawatts go from $50 to $9,000, and, of course, you're using an awful lot more, good grief. It is definitely one of those cases where you think about the nature of public utility and not a big, like, government social safety net believer, but you cannot take people who are making $100, $200 or spending $100, $200 on an electric bill and charge them $17,000. That's that you have to find a way to fix that. There has to be some solution to that. 437-1620, especially when it's the government that made the failure, right? Colossal failure. 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
New York has just been a fascinating source of weird stories. Did you see the one how the de Blasio, the mayor of New York, decided to cancel the ongoing contracts with Trump entities who provide the ice rink at Central Park as a way of punishing Trump? Right? We're going to cancel the contract. So, Davis, you're politically savvy enough to figure this out. Who really suffers if you close the ice rink early? Is it Trump? Or is it the citizens who use the ice rink?
The people that would use the ice rink.
And the people who work at the ice rink, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you picked a target out of anger and fury, and in the process, you wind up making your citizens suffer, those who work at the rink and those who like to go to the rink to use it. Now, it's funny because in the end, they're deciding to keep it open, which is good in the end, but how dumb do you have to be to not realize that closing the ice rink suddenly in the middle of the season when people are using it out of your spite for the person who owns it, because you're going to try to cancel him somehow by harming the employees and the users, that's a really bad idea.
Aren't you limiting free enterprise then?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. Because come on, it's de Blasio. He doesn't care about that.
That's ridiculous.
That's not a focus for them. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's really interesting what people do when they're angry. You know, and especially when you think like, oh, man, everybody here hates Trump just as much. They will gladly give up the ice rink because they hate the former president just like I do. It could have been a miscue. Could have been a miscount. 437-1620. Oh, this is kind of it's a fascinating little footnote to kind of an ongoing story. You know, there's been a group of people that have been challenging the Guardian program that allows, you know, non-cop school resource officers or people to be armed in the classrooms or in the schools anyway, not necessarily in the classrooms, but in the school. They've been challenging this, and they basically have lost at every level. But they just think that it's unacceptable that anybody who's not an actual cop would be allowed to have, you know, arms. League of Women Voters has been one of the primary litigants in this, which to me is a great example of how League of Women Voters used to be a good bipartisan organization and just isn't anymore.